Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, as it always happens, the 60-plus panel, we are long-winded, and we didn't really get to finish what we wanted to talk about last time. So the 60-plus panel is back with me in the studio today, and let's just dive back into our discussion of George Orwell's classic 1984. So welcome back, Daryl.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you.
So let's go back and talk about the four ministries. And I think, this kind of gets into that whole idea. If you tell as many lies, people are going to believe you. So.
Right, right.
So, Daryl, let me. I know you're really interested in these four ministries. Let me let you take the mic here.
They're interesting because they're so ridiculous in a way, because they are called the ministry of truth, the ministry of peace, the ministry of love, and the ministry of plenty. And in the short terms, in their language, newspeak, they call these many true, many packs, many love, and many plenty, which is very, very funny. But the purpose of each of these ministries is to promulgate something that is actually the very opposite of what the name of the ministry is. For example, the ministry of truth is supposed to be promulgating truth, but truth in the context of this novel is everything that is anti-truth.
Exactly.
In fact, the ministry has developed three slogans that are repeated over and over in the book. And the slogans are, war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. So those are the three great slogans that come out of the ministry of truth, which tells you a little bit about then what these ministries are all about. There's the ministry then of peace, which is, of course, the War Department.
Right.
So the ministry of peace is the War Department. There is the ministry of love, which is basically the torture department. Anyone that's
room 101.
Right. <you know. laughs> Anyone that's not following along the mode of thinking of the majority is encountered with the ministry of love. And then there's the ministry of plenty, which basically puts up apparently 3-year plans, which these kinds of governments like doing. 3-year plans. I think they said they were on their 9th 3-year plan. And talking about the items which were in abundance, which were items that nobody needs or wants, and the very things that you do need to have are not available. So the Ministry of Plenty is really just propaganda, basically, telling about things that aren't true at all. And these ministries, to me, sort of summarize a lot of what this book is about, which is about a society in which there is no truth, in which all the truth has been distorted, or it's been removed, or it's been usurped by the state. And so the only truth that there is what the state views as being true. And that is a constantly changing thing, because as things change, they have these whole ministries. In these ministries, they have people working, always changing what was written earlier to make it reflect what the current thinking is. So there's no history that is true. There is no current life that is true because of these slogans that are going on, and whatever's in the future is going to be whatever the government wants it to be, and that's then going to be doctored by erasing from the past anything that related to anything any different. So the similarity to our current media, our current mainstream media, is really shocking, because it's almost exactly what we see in the current mainstream media.
Yeah. I mean, if we just talk about the Nunes memo.
Yes.
Okay, and I mean, Americans really need to really pay a lot less attention to the media. I mean, it's really true. And if you look at even that, and again, I'm not considering myself an expert on this, but I do believe, what little we did know, my wife and I sat there in disbelief of what we heard on NPR. I mean, the thing is, just because you know, the Nunes, because Mr. I guess he's senator. I think he's senator or congressman. I'm not sure.
I think he's a congressman. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, he's actually revealing something that people have suspected a long time, that there is this shadow government, that there's dark government. And it's been out. It sneaks out of the news every now and then, but they don't. So here he writes a memo that reveals what the Democratic Party's done, what, you know, the front runner in the Democratic Party did, how they got business involved. And as soon as that came out, every report from no matter what news station you watch, whether NBC, ABC, CBS, NPR, they came out and disclaimed all of it and said it was a pack of lies, and it's just not true. So the point is, you know, that even with the Mueller investigation, they know that there's nothing to the whole thing, that there was collusion. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's snuck out, right. but they kill it right away.
Right.
And so I think it's just really kind of a tragic thing, but it is. It just shows that people that are social-minded have now gotten control of the media.
Right.
And we have to face that.
We do. And what we're living and seeing now makes this book so relevant. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, really reading this book is frighteningly similar to what's going on as we see around us today. So in fact, I was looking at this. I think, well, they need to have one more ministry. It needs to be the mini media. The mini media.
Or mini mini med.
Because, mini meds. The mini meds.
Well, the thing that's so tragic is this double think. I mean, this is where double think comes
right.
in. And so you can't, in other words, Where are you left as an American? If you have the Republicans out and say this is true, and then you have the Democrats come out and say it's not true,
right?
You know, so there, can it be both? That's where doublethink comes in. I mean, the whole idea with the chocolate. I mean, this was
right.
I think that's the funniest example in the book, where they were allowed to have 20 grams of chocolate. Mm-hmm. I think one of their distributions. So they came out and they said, "Oh, great news. We're going to increase it to 30. and here's Winston Smith knows it's not true.
Right.
And he can actually change the numbers to what he wants them to be.
Right.
You know. And so isn't that what's going on in the media?
Yes.
And it's been proven that some people have done that. I mean, there was just this I was just reading about one of the most famous he's a newscaster, not newscaster. He's done, you know, things on television. I don't know what you'd call him. I guess he's not a newscaster, but he's a popular person, popular actor. And he was accused of this sexual harassment. And he knew it wasn't true. And he knew it was all a lie. But his reputation was getting tainted. They did an investigation, and he was right. It was all made up. Now he's got to work with this for the next couple months to clear his record.
Right.
And so but that definitely is happening in this country.
Well, and these lies, you wonder if they're just from ignorance and stupidity, or if it's really just planned. Because I thought there's something interesting in this book, and when I read this, I thought, I wonder if this is really a conspiracy that's going on now. Because it says in the book, I'm reading from page 216, but it's talking about the ministries, and it says, the ministry of peace concerns itself with war, the ministry of truth with lies, the ministry of love with torture, and the ministry of plenty with starvation. These contradictions are not accidental, nor do they result from ordinary hypocrisy. They are deliberate exercises in doublethink.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and why? To get control.
To get control.
To keep Absolutely. Control. Mm-hmm. That's exactly, that's the power trip, mm-hmm. you know, in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it is. It's like I said, he's, you know, we have Bible prophecy, which we know is just history written in advance, and you think, well, this guy's not even spiritual.
Right.
But yet I think he had that vision, that he could see where things were going in England with socialism.
Right. I think he could see what was happening around him at this period of time, mm-hmm. probably in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. He could see what was going on in Europe, mm-hmm. and you could just put the pieces together as to where it was headed. You know.
Well, one of the things I think is interesting is, you know, our namesake, Herbert W. Armstrong, has this wonderful book, Mystery of the Ages, and he talked about, you know, here, you know, I was born into the 20th century. You know, he was born into the 19th. He was born in the late 1800s, so 19th century. And here, all these developments have been going on, and we're born into it, so we don't know the past. Right. And yet, here we are, we're born into this world, and we just grow up as a part of it. But as, like I said last night, or at the last program, I mentioned that, you know, we had seen this movie, this PBS special on the Gilded Age. That was right before, you know, not what, 50 years before I was born, 50 or 60 years mm-hmm. before I was born. I had no idea that happened.
Right.
So I just accept the way the world is right now.
Yeah.
And so here, all of these young children that are born, if we get into a socialist government or a socialist society, that's all they're going to know.
That's all you're going to know. Right?
And they're going to think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's really some chilling parts of this book if you really think about it.
Well, if you eliminate history and you eliminate truth, and people grow up in a society, they're born into a society where there is no truth and there is no history that can be relied upon, then you can manipulate anything. I mean, you would wonder how then would it be possible for a society like that to turn around, mm-hmm. if they would be able to turn around because of the fact that they're so under control at that point.
Right. And well, even, nowadays, I mean, there are people that are talking about rewriting history. I mean, they do that.
They do.
You know, like, for example, in the Middle East, I mean, the whole Palestinian.
Oh, yeah, it's been totally rewritten.
It's been totally, you know.
That the Jews never.
That the Jews didn't really, were never, they don't have any claim to that area.
They don't have any claim to Jerusalem because they never lived there.
Right. So, you know. And then even just rewriting history in terms of being anti-colonial, you know, around the world. And
sure.
And talking about the other peoples, I mean, it's true that the colonial societies did wrong things, but they also did good things as well.
Yes.
So, you know, in terms of society, so there has been a lot of that rewriting history already.
Right, and mm-hmm. even in America, they want us to be ashamed of the founding fathers.
Right. Yes. Right.
And what they did, I mean, mm-hmm. There's always
in the Constitution,
mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. They just want to, you know, it's kind of they make them look like they were conquering, you know, pirates mm-hmm. that came in and took the land away mm-hmm. from, you know, the native Indians. But in the very beginning, the Indians and the colonists cooperated. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't, you know, it's not that there isn't, like I said, bad things. American slavery is a problem. I mean, bringing slaves. Mm-hmm. Buying slaves and bringing, that was a problem.
Right.
I mean, that's something that we should really, you know, have been ashamed of doing that, you know, the kind of thing. But here we are today, in the long run, those people that, you know, their ancestors were slaves, look at what their opportunities are now. And it's like, okay, we could try and rewrite all that history too to make it look like it was totally evil. When we know that some white slave owners treated their slaves like family,
right.
You know, and so even I took that history course mm-hmm. when I was in college. So you've got to be careful on both sides. You can rewrite history to make things that were good look bad,
right.
And you can also rewrite history to make things that are bad look good,
right.
You know, so.
Yeah, and all things are a balance because you know there's good and evil in society. Mm-hmm. That's always been that way,
mm-hmm.
but then to strip it of all the good, which is what happens mm-hmm. in some of these rewrites of history, you strip it of all the goods because you have a political agenda of your own that you're wanting mm-hmm. to show. And that's what typically happens in these rewrites of history that go on.
Mm-hmm. You know, one question I have about this book, okay, we talk about the Ministry of Truth. Okay, let's talk about, you know, when there's these wars. And they're there supposed to encourage the people that this is a really great society.
Right.
How do they even know the wars exist? I mean, Winston never travels beyond his little world.
Right.
And so is that a pack of lies?
I think it is. I think
because you don't even know if there really is a war going on.
The fact that there is a state of war mm-hmm. is supposed to help control society because there's a war always going on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's a control issue again.
And that's kind of like the reason why it's called the Ministry of Peace, because it keeps the peace.
Right.
through war, yes. Keeps the peace through war. Yes. So everyone is always in a state of you know, cheering on, you know, the country patriotically for, you know, because of the war. And so, and they also don't mind all the shortages of things because it's for the war.
There's poor Winston in charge of correcting the facts on the Ministry of Plenty. And the guy says to him, "Hey, do you have any extra razor blades?"
That's right. Yes. And he has them and says, "No, I don't." He says,
"No, I have one. I'm keeping it in its doll. I've been using it for 11 weeks, I think he said." So anyway. Okay, so do we? What else do we want?
Ministry
of Love, we can talk about that a little bit more, too.
So. All these ministries are interesting. But I think, again, it goes back to the issue of what doublethink is. Mm-hmm. And doublethink is really having two, the way they explain it, two contradictory thoughts and accepting them both. Mm-hmm. So it's really like you have no process of thought. You're not discerning between anything.
Right.
If you have two contradictory opinions and ideas, and you accept them both, and you follow them both, then there's no you have nothing that you're holding on to, and the doublethink that's used in this book is so based on language, which I find just so fascinating. The way language is manipulated as, again, a lever of power. So that if you strip language away so that people cannot express things, will they really exist?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is an interesting point. If you strip away concepts that people have no idea of, what is a concept of freedom or a concept of privacy, or this, if you strip those terms away so that they can't even be defined anymore, then you can control that process totally. And that's what the language, the Newspeak does. It's constantly paring the language down, removing vocabulary, reinventing vocabulary to be more succinct and have less meaning, so that it's all very common and it really doesn't describe anything. And so if you can't describe ideas and you can't have ideas that are ideas that that might not be accepted by the leadership, well, then there you are. Mm-hmm. if you can't express it, do you really have it? Can you really have the idea?
That's an amazing thought. Really,
been this polemic in language as to whether if you cannot say it in words, can you really have the action? Because always thought precedes action.
The action, right.
And so usually you have thought, and then you have words to express those, and then you have action. That's sort of the transition that takes place. Well, if you have the thought, but you have no words to express, can you really have the action? There's a sort of like gap between the thoughts and the action.
Yeah, it's definitely a way to control. If you can control, let's say, people's thinking, and if it's like where I think the Apostle James said that in the Epistle of James, a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. I mean, if you look at Winston, he's unstable, and it's like he's grappling with all these things. He is a party member. He's the outer party. He's not in the inner circle. But I think that character, Sim, is one that really brings this out. And it's brought out very, very early in the beginning. And you can find this whole discussion with Sim in pages. Well, it's chapter 5 of book 1. But he was working. This guy, Sim, was working on the 11th edition of the definitive edition of Newspeak. The bottom of page 50, he says, "We're getting the language into its final shape, the shape it's going to have when nobody speaks anything else. When we have finished with it, people like you will have to learn it all over again. You think, I dare say, that our chief job is inventing new words, but not a bit of it. We're destroying words, scores of them, hundreds of them every day. We're cutting the language down to the bone. The 11th edition won't contain a single word that will become obsolete before the year 2050. And so now that's really scary.
It is.
He said, "It's a beautiful thing, the destruction of words. Of course, the great wastage in the verbs and adjectives, but there are hundreds of nouns that can be got rid of as well. It isn't only the synonyms. There are also the antonyms. After all, what justification is there for a word which is simply the opposite of some other words? A word contains its opposite in itself. Take good, for instance. If you have a word like good, what need is there for a word like bad? Ungood, will do just as well. Yeah. It's a lie.
It's a lie. It's, absolutely. It's,
yeah.
Absolutely.
And anyway, he just goes, he goes on and on about that. And, you know, but here, page 52, in the middle of the page, is where he really gets to the whole nut of the matter. Don't you see that the whole aim of Newspeak is to narrow the range of thought?
Right.
In the end, we shall make thought crime literally impossible because there will be no words in which to
Absolutely,
express it.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah,
what you said.
That's frightening. It's frightening.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
And there's a time element on it. He says by 2050, this is the way it's going to be.
Right.
So again, you have this urgency of time that if you don't get these things, you know, cleared away by a certain period of time, it's all going to be implanted and you're not going to be able to change it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where I think it's interesting that that character, Sim, he just reminds me of a skinny little snivelly intellectual.
right.
Some of the guys I was in library school with.
You know,
I was a blue collar kid. You know, I'm a little husky, and yeah, some of the other librarian types were not so husky.
You know, he has a phrase in this same paragraph where you're just reading, which I think is just fascinating, because in what we know, we can see it a different way. He says, the revolution will be complete when the language is perfect.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's like, well, yeah. Yep.
you won't be able to act. I think it's. I just want to say something else about him. Winston, he keeps saying, every time he blurts out this new thought about how great Newspeak is, he says, oh, this guy is too clear in his thinking, and he's also too verbal. He's going to be vaporized.
And he is.
And he ends up, he disappears.
And he disappears.
He absolutely disappears in the book. So, but anyway, you know, it is amazing how important language is. Mm. And that's why I get back to this the whole goal behind JBL is to keep people reading.
Wow.
To keep developing their understanding of words and language.
And then that's one thing Shakespeare did. Shakespeare was he, you know, made language so much richer and so much more. He raised the level of language.
Yeah, well, I wanted to, I mean, I felt Sim, if I could see him, I'd smack him. Because here's what he said. He says, the whole literature of the past will have been destroyed. Chaucer, Shakespeare, Milton, Byron, you know, and you know, there still is a move in education to not teach Shakespeare and to not teach Chaucer.
No.
And, you know, there is this move because, you know why? It really teaches people how to think.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And I was just reading a book the other day. It's a brand new book I was just able to pick up. And it's about Gulliver's Travels. You know, Gulliver's Travels was an actual, you know, utopia. Mm-hmm. It was all about utopia. And what this introduction to this book is fascinating. He talks about Shakespeare, and he said Shakespeare's poetry is so delightful that you don't catch on immediately to what he's trying to teach you.
Mm.
And there's a real teaching part of it. And so, you see, if you can control the language, like Orwell's talks about, if you can control it, you control education, and you can feed people uneducated.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yet, as you said, just, you know, in the last program, you know, Orwell or Winston Smith saw that the hope for the rebellion was going to come out of the proletariat because they left them alone.
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
And so essentially what he's saying is they could still think for themselves, even though they might have been too much into their beer and soccer and films and all that. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, eventually. And I think a lot of we'll see in the Hunger Games and in the Divergent series when we get into those is that's what happens, that there's some young person that comes along that can really think and can see through it.
Right.
And that's what, you know, begins to start the rebellion, you know, kind of thing. So I just thought maybe we still have, well, we're going to run out of time here, but do we want to start talking about Julia? It looks like we're going to need another program, you know, for this to get through the panel discussion. So we might have to call you back in the studio one more time. So, but do you want to start talking about Julia and how she's a little different character in the book?
Okay. Well, she's It's like she's kind of mysterious at the beginning because Winston sees her, but at first he thinks that at first he's very suspicious of her and thinks that she is watching him.
She's part of the thought police,
and that she's part of the thought police, and she's going to get him basically.
Yeah, but if you were in that society, wouldn't you think that anyway?
Oh, you think of everyone.
Absolutely. You think of everyone.
Everyone, yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. we'll just start there. So all of you listeners out there, we're going to have part four, and so of the panel discussion. But I think it's going to be worth it. So just get ready for next time and keep reading. So just want you to remember our next book in this series is a young adult fiction titled The Hunger Games by Susan Collins. It was very popular. It's still very popular. It is available for you at Amazon, and it's about $7.50. And that's for Prime members. If not a Prime member, you're going to pay a little bit more. But it's not available at ABE Books. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. And you can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. And remember, you can leave me a comment on Facebook. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.